Volodymyr Zelensky is in Dublin today, and his state visit could hardly come at a more precarious moment for the Ukrainian president. His country is under mounting pressure to sign a peace deal that the US says could end the war, but critics argue it demands major and unacceptable concessions to Russia and little, if anything, in return from Moscow. And to make things worse, just as he arrives on our shores, Zelensky has lost a key advisor in a corruption scandal. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Tara Duggan. President Zelensky is in Dublin today for his first ever official visit to Ireland. He's meeting the Taoiseach. He'll be addressing the Houses of the Oireachtas, and he'll be talking peace negotiations, all against the backdrop of what he himself calls the most difficult moment in Ukraine's history. And while he will be making the obligatory visit to the Oireachtas to meet President Connolly, this visit matters far beyond protocol. Ireland has taken in more than 120,000 Ukrainians since 2022. We're about to hold the presidency of the EU next year, and Europe, with America's commitment in doubt, may soon bear almost the entire burden of Ukraine's future security. So today we're asking, what's the real significance of this visit? Is Volodymyr Zelensky still the commanding wartime leader he was in 2022? And what role must Europe and indeed Ireland now play in securing a durable peace? To guide us through it all, I'm joined by one of the country's leading experts on Europe and Ukraine, Professor John O'Brien from Maynooth University. You're very welcome to News Talk Daily, John. Now, to start, maybe you give us the big picture here. What's the political and indeed symbolic significance of President Zelensky choosing to come to Ireland right now?
Well, I think you've got it absolutely right in your introduction. President Zelensky has been a hugely impressive leader all the way through this period of almost 4 years now of Russian brutal occupation of Ukraine. He kind of exemplifies the spirit of resistance and resilience that the Ukrainian people have shown over all of this time. But he is under enormous pressure, from the United States to essentially surrender. This wasn't a peace deal of any kind. It was a surrender deal that the Americans were trying to force upon him. For now, I think he has at least arrested the momentum in that direction. But perhaps more importantly is what's happening domestically. Andrei Yermak, his former chief of staff, was absolutely crucial to him, I think, and to his presidency. He was the key kind of point man for both domestic and foreign affairs. So it's certainly, I think, a really important loss for Zelensky. But on the other hand, I don't think he really had any choice, because the investigation around different kind of vectors of corruption in Ukraine were all pointing to Mr. Yermak. And I think for the sake of the credibility of the country, also the sake of countering Russian propaganda, Zelensky had really no choice but to get rid of him. He's also faced more pressure from the Ukrainian parliament, which hasn't been as active as it might be because, of course, the country has been under martial law. But I think what we're probably going to see domestically now in Ukraine is Zelensky having to take much more cognizance of what the opposition in parliament is saying. And the other big player in this is the European Union. I think one of the reasons that the anti-corruption forces came after Yermak and others was because Ukraine is now deeply embedded in negotiations with the European Union to become a member of the EU. And that requires a really rigorous approach to rooting out corruption. So I think part of what's played out over the last week or so is trying to demonstrate to Ukraine's European partners, who have provided it up to now with almost 200 billion euros in both military and financial aid, saying to them, look, we realize this is a real problem. We're dealing with it. All of those things are the things that are in play, I think, as President Zelensky lands in Ireland.
Are you suggesting Yermak was something of a sacrificial lamb?
Not necessarily. And the allegations against him, remember, at this point, are merely that. They're allegations. Way before the Russians launched their second invasion of Ukraine in 2022, there was an international reputation there that was really negative for Ukraine, that corruption was a very important part of the political and business landscape. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. Now, it's kind of dreadful to see Russia making hay out of that because, of course, Russia is one of the worst kleptocracies in the world. Vladimir Putin and the oligarchs surrounding him have stolen literally trillions of dollars, euros from the Russian people. So for them to be focusing on corruption in Ukraine is hypocritical, to say the least. But I think in the end, the pressure coming from the Verkhovna Radna, the Ukrainian parliament, especially the opposition, and from the European partners of Ukraine, that was enough, I think, for Zelensky to do what I think he was actually proving reluctant to do. Back in the summertime, for example, there was an effort made to essentially gut the anti-corruption measures that had been introduced. Initially, Zelensky went along with this framework, but he had no choice to back off, precisely because of domestic pressure, but also because of European pressure. I think what we've seen now is the kind of logical culmination of that. And the Ukrainians really know that where Europe is concerned, they have to demonstrate clearly, even with all the pressure of trying to maintain the war effort, that they are doing the serious preparations that are needed to become a member of the European Union. I think that's the most important context here.
Who instigated this visit? Was it Ireland or was it Ukraine?
That I don't know. This is the first time that President Zelensky is visiting Ireland. He has in the past talked to universities, for example, all of the Irish universities together at one point to thank Irish people for their support for Ukraine. I think the Irish government has been in very close contact with Ambassador Garasco. She's been a very effective ambassador, I think, for making the case for Ukraine with policymakers, with the rest of the diplomatic community, and with the public. What this is part of really is an effort to shore up Ukraine's support around Europe. And I think Ireland is seen as a very important player. Even if we're a very small country, even within the European Union, we will hold the presidency of the European Council next year, in the second half of next year. And I think that's part of the reason for the timing of this visit. Yesterday, President Macron was at President Zelensky was in Paris visiting President Macron. Today, it's Ireland. And I have to think that a big part of this is about what's going to happen next year and about the Irish presidency of the EU.
Now, in addition to the addresses that he made to the Irish universities, President Zelensky has also previously addressed the joint houses of the Oireachtas. He'll be doing that again today. Is there a difference between the addresses that were made by video link previously and the one that will happen in person later?
I think it's always different, in fact. There's a very different atmosphere. If leaders are present in a room, you can make the kind of connections that it's just not possible to make online or in televised addresses of different kinds. So, yeah, I think that's an important part of this. It's kind of firming up the Irish-Ukrainian relationship. I'm sure he's going to offer thanks to the members of the Oireachtas as well as successive governments for the support that they've offered Ukraine. And to do that in person, I think it lends it a kind of dynamism and a credibility that's not always there when you're talking about remote addresses.
Now, Ireland has welcomed more than 120,000 Ukrainians since the invasion began. How central do you think that diaspora dimension is to his visit, or does it figure in it at all?
Oh, I think it does. For example, a couple of years ago, almost exactly 2 years ago, we in Maynooth University hosted former President Zuchenko. And my memory of it is that not only did we have a huge audience, but it actually meant a huge amount to the Ukrainian people who were present. Some of them were secondary school students, some of them were our university students, and then there were many, many people from the community. And it was very emotional. I think given all the extraordinary suffering that Ukrainians have experienced and continue to experience, because Russia keeps sending huge numbers of drones and ballistic missiles to attack civilians. And he's done that spectacularly, Putin has, in recent weeks. So, yeah, I think that's an important part of this. Ireland, of course, hasn't just been a disproportionately large recipient of Ukrainian people since the outbreak of the war. There are probably still, by the way, about 80,000 out of that 120,000 people who initially came or who came at different periods still living in the country. And they are present in almost every village and town in Ireland. I think that's really important. But we should acknowledge also that although Ireland has been very restricted in the help that it could offer Ukraine, it's been confined very obviously as a militarily neutral country to non-lethal aid. That aid amounts probably to about 380 or 90 million euros already, and it's planned that that will go up over the next year or two. And it includes a whole lot of things like support for demining. Mines are a real issue in many parts of the front line of the war, and Ireland has been helping in that regard, along with bomb disposal, training of Ukrainian army medical personnel, help with satellite communications. And we've also provided a lot of defense radar equipment and things of that kind. So if you put all of that together, the Irish response, even with the constraints we have as a militarily neutral country, it's still been very significant. And I think that's what President Zelensky is going to acknowledge in his different speeches and so on in Ireland today.
Now, John, you mentioned that you expect he will thank politicians across the floor of both the Dáil and Seanad today for the response and the welcome that has been given to people fleeing the war. That's changed slightly, though, hasn't it, lately? I mean, the supports that were on offer, the welcome that was given to those individuals, provision for housing, etc. There's been a bit of a rowback on that now of late. Do you think that's on President Zelensky's mind at all?
Well, there has been some friction, I think, because of this in the recent past. It's part, of course, of a broader, much broader change in Ireland's approach to migration, a kind of tighter, more restrictive policy that's emerging under Jim O'Callaghan. But I don't think, for the most part, it's been in any way the dominant issue. There are lots of Ukrainian people, for example, who are working because we have full employment. Yep. I meet them in my own university and in the town and in all kinds of other areas. So I don't think this is the issue that it might have been in different circumstances. In fact, I think most Ukrainians, that the help was really necessary at the beginning, whatever point they actually come to Ireland. And then after that, if they're able to integrate into the community, especially younger people, I think, who speak English almost fluently, I don't think that issue is as much of an issue as it might have been, you know, 2 years ago or 2.5 years ago.
We, of course, have the Ring of Steel in place, the really high security around Dublin today during the visit. We've been led to believe behind the scenes that this actually could be tighter security than we've seen for other high-profile state visits. Why would that be? What is the threat?
Well, the clear threat, I think, is from malign actors mostly associated with the Russian Federation. Russia, I can guarantee you, does not see Ireland as a neutral country. This is the reason that it's been doing lots of different things to test our resolve, as it has been doing all over Europe. That includes the attack on the HSE, the cyber attack in 2021. It includes most recently, I think, the cyber attack on Dublin Airport at the end of September. Mm-hmm. We know that Russian vessels like the MV Yantar have been repeatedly coming into our territorial waters, and the suspicion is that they are probing those waters, including our undersea cables in the Atlantic, to get a sense of just how weak Ireland's defences are. Now, Russian activity has been much more intense in Central and Eastern Europe, in the Baltic states, Poland, and elsewhere, where we've seen all kinds of things like assassinations of political opponents, drone incursions, plane incursions into Poland, attacks on railways, on ammunition dumps in the Czech Republic and in Bulgaria and elsewhere. So we've had some of that. And I think that's the real context for this focus on security. So I think you're absolutely right. This is going to be a step change from some of the state visits or important governmental visits that we would normally see happen in Dublin. I think it's also being used as a kind of test case for the EU presidency that we will have next year, because under the kind of architecture of the EU presidency, Ireland will be chairing lots of different sectoral meetings of the Council of Ministers and of European Council leaders, that is, heads of state and government. Obviously, we've held the presidency many times before. Almost every time Ireland has held the presidency, it's been very successful because we're kind of trusted as a mediator. But the security challenge this time around are of a completely different order. Europe hasn't seen anything like this in the 7 decades or so history of the EU. So that priority of protecting ministers, of protecting civil servants and all the other people associated with these visits, it's a very, very high priority. And I'm sure that they're looking at this as a test case for the second half of next year, when we will be hosting all of those meetings under the rubric of the EU presidency.
Let's talk about Zelensky himself, the man. Is he still the strong wartime communicator of 2022, or is he entering something of a politically weakened phase? And then just also personally, you know, this has been going on for so long now. The toll on the man as an individual must be beyond grueling.
You're absolutely right. When he came to office, he was quite a well-known figure in Ukraine because, of course, he had been an act principally associated with this series called Servant of the People, a West Wing-like production that gained a lot of traction, actually, even way beyond Ukraine. I think from the very moment he made that famous statement in Kyiv, when, by the way, the Russians were planning to assassinate him if they had managed to take the city, when he said, "What I need is not a ride, but ammunition." I think that kind of framed him. For Ukrainians themselves, it was very important in inculcating a sense of resistance and heroism. And I think it framed him internationally as well. Now, he's had lots of different periods over the last 3.5 years where he's been under pressure. Think back to that White House meeting in February in the Oval Office.
Who could forget?
One of the most disgraceful scenes I think the Oval Office has ever seen, where Trump and Vance essentially tried to humiliate him. Their aim from the very beginning, I think, has been to get Ukraine to surrender. And then Trump could package that as yet another of these intractable conflicts that he has solved. Even the most recent deal had all the fingerprints of Moscow on it. And I think they have continued to try and browbeat Zelensky into giving up. It's to his great credit that he hasn't. Now, I think within Ukraine, the war, of course, has taken an immense psychological toll, and it would be really difficult, I think, for any president not to see their popularity suffer. Remember that at the end of World War II, Winston Churchill was chucked out of office after playing such an extraordinary role in resisting Nazism and eventually winning that war. So I don't think his position is that unusual, but I can't even begin to imagine what it has been like, because he's not only been trying to manage the war, he's been also trying to manage the Ukrainian economy. And I think, again, the Ukrainians have demonstrated incredible capacities for adaptation and innovation. Think about their production of drones, for example. They produced virtually none at the beginning of the war, and now they're really innovating in that area, and it's helped them keep the Russians at bay to a large extent. And even what he's doing in Ireland today, he's done a vast amount of this, whether in person or online, to try and keep that alliance that has supported Ukraine in place, and especially since January when Trump came back to office, where they faced this kind of unique challenge of keeping the United States on side, while all the time, I think they were more than aware that the Americans were looking at this in this completely transactional way. We know that acolytes of Trump are just chafing at the bit to get into Russia and make money. Again, there have been lots of revelations about that in recent weeks. So Zelensky has proved himself, I think, the most formidable leader in the world over the last almost 4 years or so. Whether he can survive in office, I think, is really down to whether Ukraine can continue to fend off the Russians and avoid a settlement that would mean conceding huge swathes of territory to Russia and having the military defanged and so on. So he may be under enormous pressure, but I think the resilience that he's shown is kind of emblematic of the wider resilience of Ukrainian people. It's been extraordinary.
And what do you think are the chances of him being able to bat off that consistent pressure from the US to concede what seems to be, on the face of it and what we've heard so much, when Moscow was giving little versus nothing in return?
Yeah, what Zelensky has to reckon with is that the United States, which under Trump's predecessors, think about Ronald Reagan, for example, he referred to the Soviet Union as the evil empire, and his central foreign policy goal was to end the Soviet Union. Well, the Americans largely succeeded in that. Now we've seen this 180-degree swing where Trump really admires autocrats like Putin, like Xi Jinping. And I think this is the reason we've seen a dramatic change in the American position. Now, it could also be because of other reasons.
There are compromise. All
these allegations about compromise. And I think if you look at this, you ask the question, well, what has Trump done that may have damaged Russia or Russian interests in the course of this year? And the answer is virtually nothing. And that raises real suspicions. But for Zelensky, the problem is that the United States has switched sides. Trump doesn't come out directly and say this, but that is actually what has happened. And I think this brings into play more than ever the European part in supporting Ukraine. The Europeans have helped a lot. They've given about $200 billion or so in both military and financial assistance. But with the Americans effectively stepping out, the European component of NATO becomes absolutely crucial to Ukraine's ability to hold on.
Once the handshakes and the ceremony is done today, what message must Ireland deliver to Vladimir Zelensky?
The message that will go out from the Taoiseach and the Minister of Foreign Affairs and others is, we are absolutely behind you and supportive of you. We will continue to contribute to the European Peace Fund to deliver the kind of aid that we talked about a little bit earlier. We'll also provide more financial support for you. We'll put pressure on Belgium to change its position on frozen Russian funds in Belgium and try and put that to use for Ukraine's defense and for its rebuilding. The other thing I think that will be very clear is that the Taoiseach will probably come out and say something about Ireland's support for Ukraine in its endeavors to become a member of the EU. One of the reasons I think we have a disproportionate kind of influence in this dimension of EU activity is we joined as the poorest, most peripheral state in 1973. And above all other countries, almost, we are imagined to have made the greatest kind of leap in development as a result of our membership. And I've seen this repeatedly over the last 20 years. There is immense interest in Eastern Europe at looking at the Irish development model, the economic model, and how we manage to use our EU membership successfully to literally transform the country. I think there'd definitely be rhetoric of that kind from the Taoiseach, and encouraging the Ukrainians to keep doing the kind of reforms, including the anti-corruption activity, that will move it closer to the European Union in time. I think we'll see a determined effort on the part of Irish leaders to say Ukraine is part of the European family. And just like we had a very difficult period in the past, we now want to be part of this support system to ensure that Ukraine does become a member of the European Union in the near future.
John O'Brien, thank you so much for your insight and sharing it with us today on News Talk Daily. That's it for today's edition. If you have any thoughts on our conversation or on the state visit of Volodymyr Zelensky today, we'd love to hear from you. You can email newstalkdaily@newstalk.com. I'm Tara Duggan. I'll talk to you again tomorrow.